Hi, I'm Diana Yokley. I'm a peaceful parenting coach and mom of three, and I'm delighted to give you the latest science-backed research on child development, parenting, and to support you in showing up as the parent that you want to be.
All right. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Diana Yokley. I'm founder of Delight in Parenting, and I'm here with Krista Lockwood, the founder of Motherhood Simplified. Welcome, Krista.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah. And we're going to be doing a podcast swap. So we're both going to be on this podcast. Will be airing on both of our platforms. So yeah, we're kind of bringing the world together today in terms of parenting in a more conscious, mindful way, more present parenting, and how that relates to simplifying your life with just clutter and managing all the things in the house that need a place. So yeah, I'm really excited that you're here today. I think it's going to be really powerful for my audience to learn how to simplify their task list related to inanimate objects around the house.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited too, because I feel like you talk about more of the, like the actual parenting skills, and I talk about how to set your environment up so that those parenting skills are actually doable. Because I think a lot of times what I see is moms coming in to my space, into my group, you know, looking for ways to, you know, support their kids, like teaching them how to clean up, teaching them how to be responsible for their things. Also, you know, trying to be gentle about it, right? And not get to a place where they're like yelling about the messes or nagging about the messes or getting angry about pointless messes, right? Just to say it again. It's really difficult to like practice these parenting skills and like these communication type things when you're stretched so thin by like what you said, kind of like the menial tasks, the stuff that's in your way, especially as parents, because with parents comes more stuff. It doesn't have to be an overwhelming amount of stuff, but it comes with more stuff. It comes with more moving parts. It comes with more personalities to manage. And so the more you can simplify your environment to really work for you and support you, the easier it is to do things like parent in the way that you would ideally like to, which isn't always possible. You know, we do our best that we can, but it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love it. And in terms of even like kind of the interpersonal neurobiology, like if we think about our nervous systems, you know, we go from like being calm and regulated to dysregulated, and then we kind of try to go back to calm and regulated. And one of the things that can put us into dysregulation is just the amount of things that we have to stress over. And the to-do list generally drives, as parents, drives our, you know, agenda for the day. And it really adds more stress to your nervous system because, there's just always not enough time to do everything, right? It's like, and then where does the parents' kind of self-care and taking care of their own just basic needs go on the list? Usually at the bottom somewhere, even though it should be toward the top. So I think the more we can simplify the things that are not as essential, take them out of kind of the nervous system stressors. Like you said, there's plenty of, you know, stressors that gonna come from just raising children. So how can we simplify all the other stressors that aren't going to take it personally? How can we take them out? And even if, you know, even if we enjoy our things, maybe for the time being when we're parenting, so we can be more mindful and present with our kids, maybe some of those, managing some of these things can be a task that we bring back in our lives later when the children aren't so needy, so that we can spend more time in our kind of calm nervous system. While the children are like growing and need us, right? They won't need us forever. They'll come to a point where they're going to want to go off with their friends and we're going to be waiting for them to come back home. That's when we can manage our stuff, right? But when they're after us and we're like, I don't have time right now. I've got to go clean up this mess and somebody's coming over and there's just so much to do.
Yeah. You touched on two big things that I see very often. And number one is the overstimulation of parenting. I think especially moms with super young kids, like 5 and under, where they physically are so dependent on you, it's overstimulating. So there's that overstimulation of the touch. There's the overstimulation of the noise, there's the overstimulation. I think those are probably the biggest ones that we think of. But when we think of our home, clutter is stimulating, right? And for some of us,
it's like a visually stimulating.
Visually overstimulating. And some of us are more sensitive to it. I'm very sensitive to it for different reasons. First of all, just like on a tangible level, this is probably something that you know more about. Your brain has to process everything that you're looking at, right? And with that, it, you know, comes your overstimulation. It overstimulates your kids. So it makes them even louder. It makes them, you know, rowdier. It makes them need you more for like physically to co-regulate. So you're overstimulated by the stuff. They're overstimulated by the stuff. And not only is it a physical overstimulation, but it's mental, because when you're looking at all of this stuff, it's like adding to your running mental to-do list. I have to catch up on the laundry. I have to catch up on the dishes. I have to deal with that pile of stuff on the counter, that pile of stuff on the stairs, the toys that are spilling out over everywhere. And so it's physically overstimulating, but it's also mentally overstimulating, which then makes you emotionally overstimulated. And it's just a big overstimulating time for everyone.
And really, it's also like probably overstimulating for your children. I mean, we know when children play, the simpler the toys, the more creative the child is, the more stuff there is, even though as parents, it's like, oh, let me get them this cute new thing. It's overstimulating the kids, right? So they actually become more irritable, more needy, more meltdowns, more emotional dysregulation, just like the parent does from just the visual. It makes it harder to be a pleasant child.
Yeah. And just for an anecdotal story that helps paint the picture for parents, I used to be a Montessori teacher. And before I was doing decluttering, before I even like knew what I was doing, I would get hired as a consultant for classrooms, usually kids like 3 to 4 years old, for these non-Montessori classrooms to come in and help them with the teachers who were having difficulty with like what they called behavioral issues. Kids who were throwing, biting, you know, just chronically destroying the classrooms, right? And so they would bring me in to help with these behaviors. And the very first thing we would do is simplify the classroom. And like I said, I didn't really intuitively, I knew it. I think all of us have things that we're naturally good at. This is my thing. So I would come in and I would tell them, they would tell me what's going on. I would say, great. First thing we're going to do is like redo your classroom. We're going to set this classroom up so it's easy for the kids to see where things go. We're going to reduce the amount of stuff on the shelves. And most of them were resistant to it. And they're like, you know, I've got 20 kids in this classroom. I don't think this is going to work. We would do it. And the next day when the kids would come in, like immediately they were calmer. They were interested. They were playing with things how they should be played with. They were able to see, you know, in their library section, there's only 5 books on the shelf. So only this many kids can be in here at a time, rather than before when they would have 20 books and it would be like 4 or 5 kids just dogpiling, you know, ripping through the books to see what they can find. So I think that just paints a really good picture of how environments have they have a really deep impact on us as adults, but especially as kids, because their brains aren't developed. They need less. They need less than us.
Right.
So yeah, there's that overstimulation. But the other thing that you mentioned that I think is really important too was like understanding that certain seasons of your motherhood, your kids are going to require more of you in different ways. And so you might have to put things on the back burner or change the way that you do things, knowing that it's not forever.
Right.
And I love that conversation because our kids are right now, we have 5 aged 4 all the way up to 17. And on my podcast, I've been talking a lot about this. Like the last 3 years have been like me doing bare minimum everything, still staying afloat, but like knowing this is my season of bare minimum because I have 2 under 2 again. Right. Now I'm out of it and I can bring these things back and I can give, you know, myself some more time, give my older kids more responsibility, my younger kids, I can teach them these things. So yes, I think that's just a really important thing to consider and remember, that how you parent is going to change and it's not always so physically demanding. I mean, it is, but it's different.
Yeah, no, I love that. It kind of makes me think of like how we always talk about, is it developmentally appropriate for this child to exhibit this behavior? Or is this a developmentally appropriate toy? Well, in terms of parenting, you know, is this like the appropriate environment for that season in your parenting that you're in? Is this what's going to be the most appropriate, like, surroundings that's going to help you be the best parent that you can? Doesn't mean, like, when it's not an appropriate toy for the child, doesn't mean that in 5 years it won't be appropriate, because their brains change and they're able, now they're mastering some other skill. But it kind of made me think, you know, when we think about, like, let's go take the kids for a hike, and people will say, like, people with, like, toddlers will say, oh, I haven't done that in a while. It's like, well, yes, of course you haven't done that, because you have a baby. You're not just going to, like, you know, without your partner, just take the baby and a bunch of other little kids, and we're all just going to go hiking with one adult in the woods, deep in the woods. Like, no, you haven't done that because you couldn't. But when the baby is maybe like 4 or 5, you know, and you have another adult with you, it's a whole different ball game. Like, now you can do this activity that you couldn't do before. So same with, like, clutter, right? And not to say that clutter is good. I'm just saying some people like their stuff. Some people like to have some of their stuff, and what is kind of the best, it's more of a balance, right? Like, in parents, in the season of parenting, what's the best balance for you right now? And I guess, what would be the starting place? How would parents even know, like, whether they should declutter or not? What's a good, like, kind of assessment?
Yeah. I'm going to give this example, because you mentioned something that I think is important too, which is knowing, like, just being familiar. This is probably what you teach. And I learned, because I did Montessori teaching, but I've got a bachelor's degree in child development as well, is uh-huh. just kind of being vaguely or briefly enough aware of the age and stage of your kid's development, uh-huh. and knowing, like, what's normal for them to do, what's, you know, maybe abnormal, and what's a symptom of clutter. So I think if your kids are experiencing symptoms of clutter, that's a good sign for you to reduce it. And kids will have different, and adults have different thresholds of what they can manage. But if you notice that they are destructive, if you notice that they are easily overstimulated, if you notice that they're saying things like, I'm bored, there's nothing to do, yet you're like, there's so many toys here, how are you bored? Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That could be a sign that they need to declutter, or that you need to declutter. But there are some other things that I want to mention just for clarity, just to, like, give you a good idea. So mm-hmm. with, like, younger kids, let's say, like, kids 4 and under, a lot of times moms will come into the group and say, my kids just dump the toys out everywhere, and then they leave them and they don't clean them up. And dumping things out is a normal behavior for children, like 2 to 3 years old. That's a very normal thing for them to do. It's a skill that they're practicing, like, with their body, like, dump the toys out. That's all they want to do in Montessori classrooms. That's literally an activity that uh-huh. we set up so that they can do uh-huh. that. And uh-huh. so the solution is not to, like, teach them not to dump it out, right? It's not to be like, you can't dump it out, you're making a mess. The solution would be, okay, so they're in a dumping phase. I need to declutter all the stuff around it so that they can take this and they can dump it out, and I can easily show them, if you want to do that again, clean it up, put it in the bucket, and you can do it again. But when uh-huh. you have too much uh-huh. stuff, if you have, like, a bucket of blocks on a shelf that also has books and other blocks and Legos and stuffed animals and who knows what else could be on a toy shelf, they're going to take that out and they're going to dump it, and then they're going to be confused and overstimulated and then bored, because they're like, I don't know what to do anymore. Like, I did the dumping, and that's it, right? So if you can declutter so that they can actually practice their skills that are age appropriate, that's helpful. But it's kind of a matter of determining or distinguishing between what's the normal behavior, what's a symptom of clutter, right? Mm-hmm. And then decluttering. And you should also consider yourself in this, right? If you have a low threshold and it's too much for you to manage, especially the more kids I have, the less I can manage. If it's too much for you to manage, you know, if it's too much for you to teach your kids how to do this, you can totally declutter some, or kind of like you were saying, as an adult, sometimes we have to, you know, put our sewing stuff up or our craft stuff up for a few years, and then we can pull it back out. You can do the same thing with the toys of, like, this right now is too much. And when I had the babies, you know, 2 under 2, and then I had older kids, I would tell my big kids that, like, we can't have, like, it's too much for me to watch the baby and the toddler and having you guys dump all of these Legos with teeny tiny pieces out on the floor. Like, it's, I don't have enough eyes and hands for this
to keep everybody safe. Yeah.
So you can take these Legos up to your room, And when you're done with them, I really need you to make sure that you are cleaning them up so that if they go into your room, right, we don't have an accident, right? Or those kinds of things. So yeah, just
kind of like setting some limits around, setting some limits with your kids about what is going to work for your family right now and what wouldn't.
Yeah. And I'm curious your opinion on this, because I think sometimes, and I don't ever talk about parenting. I just kind of like do my thing and refer people out to experts like you. But what I found sometimes with, you know, people who are trying to parent in, you know, like gentle parenting ways or ways that give their kids autonomy and freedom is that I feel like they want to do it perfectly and they don't want to always consider their own limits, right? Like for me, I'm like, I can't have a baby and a toddler. And you two big kids going wild with the Legos, right? I want you guys to have that. But right now, like I can't have it here in this space. So I'm just curious on your thoughts about like setting limits with kids in a way that like is supportive of them and you.
And you. Yeah, no, for sure. My free gift to you is access to my parenting membership with a free 30-day trial where you'll find bite-sized video and audio strategies, scripts, masterclasses, a private community with parents just like you, and weekly group coaching calls directly with me, and so much more. Go to delightinparenting.com/membership to learn more. You know, to kind of just give you the framework of what peaceful parenting as developed by Dr. Laura Markham entails, it's self-regulation of the parents. So self-regulating your own emotions, not expecting yourself to be perfect. You have all the range of feelings that you can have as a human, but you don't take out your feelings on your kids, right? Like you manage your own feelings and frustrations and support yourself, take responsibility so that you can then show up as an adult with your children, right? And then connecting with your children and then coaching versus controlling. So this is the coaching piece, is where we set limits with the kids in terms of behavior. So really the overarching approach is all feelings are allowed. They can be upset that you're saying like, we're not going to be able to do the Legos downstairs. And when you're done with them, I need you to pick them up. Oh, mom, but why? It's like, I know that's not what you wanted. You wish it was, you know, a different way. I hear you. You're really frustrated by that. You can have your emotions. I'm right here. Tell me all about it. Let's talk about it and validate all their emotions, empathize with them, really 24/7 empathy. They can have their feelings about what you need, but then we set limits on behavior. So like, feelings first, behaviors get the limits. We don't limit their feelings, we limit their behavior. So if they're choosing to, or if they're not choosing, if they're just like, well, I'm going to try to play with the Legos down here, even though she said not to, you know, you would talk to them about it. So, you know, I know that, you know, you really like to play down here. And remember, we talked about our new house rule that we're going to play with these in your room. We have to keep these upstairs or wherever it is so that the babies can't get to it. What can we do going forward to help support you? Because we can't have these down here. And so you're really reinforcing it, finding, working with them on like a win-win solution. What can we do to get you what you need, which is to play with Legos, and for me to get what I need, which is to not have it down here. So it's coaching. You're not telling them like I'm the boss and you do as I say, because then they just don't do it as well. They really don't do it as well. Right. It's not as effective. We're going for effectiveness. And so when you help them like brainstorm and you listen to their ideas, even if you don't agree with some of their ideas, you at least hear them out, you acknowledge, validate them. And then you come up with a solution, you know, oh, I have an idea, mom. What is it? You know, maybe such and such. Okay. Well, you know what? That might work for me. I think that's a good idea. Let's go with that. Let's try it. And if it doesn't end up working, if it's just too hard for you, and if it's too hard for me, you know, we'll have to change it, but let's try it and let's see how it goes so that you get their buy-in as a little person, right? Because they already struggle with, you know, brain development. Like they have a lot of work that they're doing, growing a brain and impulse control. And sometimes things look really enticing and they have a hard time resisting their impulses, which is so age appropriate. So you're always looking for like, you know, within the context of their age, can they kind of meet my limit? And if not, when they can't meet your limit that you've set, you support them with more coaching. It's like scaffolding a building you're supporting the building through scaffolding, not through punishment. Or like gardening, we don't get mad at the plant because it doesn't grow. We figure out what's wrong with the soil and we add more nutrition, more water, more sunlight, and create an environment, which again, Maria Montessori, right? It's the child, it's the environment that we impact. We don't change the child. We change the environment so that they can thrive. I think this kind of self-respect about what your own needs are, because what happens if we don't set boundaries on what we need as parents, we end up screaming at our kids and we don't like that, right? We don't like to do that. We don't like to just lose it because we're just like, we try to be the perfect parent. We try to be super gentle. And now we've been pushed past our breaking point, and everybody has a breaking point. We're human. We all have a breaking point. Let's stay far from the edge by setting boundaries and limits, including with our kids. It's great role modeling for them too.
Yeah. I love this. Cause you just kind of validate a lot of things that I talk about. And I just put out two episodes, one on should you do a toy rotation? And the other one was the components of creating simple routines, habits, and chore systems that work. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to tell people, cause like I said, I don't like talking about the parenting side, but the one thing that you just said was one of the things that you need is to make sure that they are taught how to do what's expected of them. And mm-hmm. you have to be aware of when it's above their threshold, just developmentally, but also if they have something going on, right?
Right.
Especially with older kids, mm-hmm. you know, like my 14-year-old the other night, like did not do her chores because she had an extra 2.5 hours of schoolwork that got unexpectedly, you know, put on her plate.
Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm.
group projects that did not go very group project-like. And mm-hmm. so, you know, I was able to do that. But even sometimes the brain changes so much, and you might be able to confirm this or explain it in a better way. But we see it a lot with toddlers. Like if they're having a language growth spurt, and all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you know, overnight they're speaking in 4 or 5 word sentences. And then we notice that they struggle with potty training. And we're like, mm-hmm. why? They were potty trained for so long, right? It's because they really are going through a lot and they need sometimes to like integrate this new thing that they just figured out. And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we forget that the same is true for like preteen and teenage brains as well.
Right.
Like mm-hmm. they're going through a lot too. And it's not that different from toddlers where some days you're going to have to be like, you know, I know you know how to do this. I know you know how to wash the dishes. I know you know how to put them away and do your laundry, but it looks like you've forgotten. So mm-hmm. I'm going to show you again. Right. And they might mm-hmm. still need mm-hmm. some help. I think that's really important. And when it comes to stuff in the house, like if you have clutter and you have all of this stuff in your way and you have a workload that is too much for you to keep up on, it's hard to distinguish between like, when do they actually need something? And when are they, you know, having a symptom of clutter? Well, they're too overwhelmed. They're too confused. It's too big of a project. It's too much work for one person, let alone one teenager to keep up mm-hmm. on. If mm-hmm. you can reduce your stuff so that it's within their threshold, you can kind of troubleshoot, like, is this a behavior thing? Is this a pushing boundaries thing? Is this a, they actually need help, right? Or the expectations weren't clear. It makes it easier to kind of troubleshoot what to fix and how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that. I think sometimes overall we have these unrealistic expectations of our kids, and sometimes we hold them to expectations that we don't even hold ourselves to just by cultural design.
Yeah.
It's like, well, a 6-year-old should be able to clean up their own room completely. Which may be true of some 6-year-olds, but not all. Right. And then there's also the element of like neurodiversity, which parents may not even realize is like executive function or ADHD. Like if you don't even have a clue that your kid maybe has some of this going on and you tell them to clean up their room and they can't even get started in the, what they're doing, they end up doing is just playing with one thing in there. You leave them and you come back and you're just like this. And then these labels start like, right. Of like, you're lazy, you're messy. Nobody would choose to be lazy, like as a label. Nobody would choose the messy, like you know, label as a person, as a child, who would want to be that so that other people can call them that? I think there's, you know, I think, I don't think there's any intent ever. I think it's more just, what are the needs that this child has that they don't have supported yet? And how can you as the adult step in and support them? Because I think every child wants to be regarded as helpful and, you know, collaborative and a team player. And if they're not doing their part, there's a reason. Any thoughts on that?
I think you're spot on. And I think that leads into the question you asked earlier I don't think I fully answered it, is like, how do you start? And I think the way that you start is by doing these things first, like decluttering your own stuff first, so that you know, first of all, what it's like to have to get rid of your stuff. Because if you have kids that are like 5 and above, especially like 7 and above, and they're pretty aware of like what's going on, you can empathize with them. You will also have, you know, the skill set of it, right? Of like, the way that you declutter a spice cabinet is very different than the way you're going to declutter something bigger, like your closet, your wardrobe, your basement, right? Your toy storage. It's just a different skill set, and it's a different approach, and you have to consider different things, right? There's not a lot of emotions attached to your spices.
Right.
But, you know, if you're going through your wardrobe as a mom whose body's changed a lot of times, your wardrobe represents career changes, lifestyle changes, size changes. That's a pretty emotionally charged thing to go through. And your kids are going to have the same things, right? They're probably not going to care too much about like decluttering. Well, depends on the kid. Like, I have a kid,
right?
Anything is a big deal, right? Like,
yeah,
old socks with holes in them are a big deal to her.
Yes, same here. Yeah, I have one like that too.
But, you know, they're going through things like that, like their old socks that you can easily, more easily tell them, like, this sock doesn't fit you anymore and it's pretty gross and it has giant holes in it. You can't even wear it. Like, we should just get rid of this. They're more likely to be like, yeah, okay, you know, versus getting rid of, you know, they have 3 baskets of stuffed animals.
Oh gosh, reduce it down. I knew you were going to go there with the stuffies.
Yeah.
That is a big one.
Yes. And we successfully did it with my 6-year-old the other day. She's the one who's like hyper attached to everything. We like enlisted the help of my 14-year-old daughter, the 4-year-old, and then my 6-year-old. And we were like, you know, going through them one by one and being like, helping her notice her responses to them, right? So there would be some that we would hold up and be like, should we keep this? And for her, we were telling her, or should we give it to a store or a place where they'll give it to a kid who wants it, right? That was the approach that we took with her, just trying it out. And there were some that we would hold up and she'd be like, I like it, I don't want to get rid of it, right? But then there were other ones where we'd hold them up and she'd be like, I love that one. Like, this is Sheep the Lamb's mom, right? We were able to help her like recognize, like, it kind of looks like you weren't too excited about this one. And we don't really ever see you playing with this one. What if we just put this one in the go pile? And she was more inclined to say yes, which is a big deal for her. Because 2 years ago, it was like zero, no, nothing, never, ever, ever. Mm-hmm. Part of that is developmentally appropriate. Part of it is just her personality, I think.
It's the personality too, yeah.
Because once they get to be like 5 and 6 and they start noticing like things can leave forever, right? That's just part of them understanding that. She was perfect. She was at the perfect age to want to keep it all, but also her personality, I think, is just a collector by nature.
And it's like a safety thing too. I feel like some of these things, like stuffed animals, they're a sense of safety, because when we give them a stuffed animal, it's like, oh, here's a cuddle bear. It's soft. I mean, it's a stuffy, it's soft. It's like a sense of nurturing. And it's kind of like a replacement of when you don't have some other human there to co-regulate with, you use the stuffed animal to kind of soothe yourself. And so then when we're saying, okay, we're going to declutter, we're going to get rid of half of these stuffies, it's kind of like saying half your family is going to be going bye-bye. Because that is what they use to, like, their nervous system recognizes these items as like an extension of a safety. And of course it's hard for some kids that are more sensitive, whose nervous systems are more sensitive to dysregulation, because it's like, well, this is what I rely on. How can I get rid of this? What am I going to do without it?
Yeah. And if they have siblings, like they've spent countless hours playing with those together.
Yes.
But like doing it as a family, we were able to kind of show her like, you guys play with these ones all the time. It's like, these ones are always mm-hmm. shoved down on the bottom and nobody ever plays mm-hmm. with them. We should let somebody else, you know, have a good time with them. Somebody else is going to love this one, right? And have mm-hmm. a really good time mm-hmm. with them. Like, and not all kids will respond to that. Like I said, she wouldn't have responded to that 2 years ago. And so kind of what we talked about earlier, we kept them all, you know, even when it was too much, knowing that mm-hmm. pretty soon down the road would be right. a better time to try it. And mm-hmm. part of decluttering is also putting good boundaries about what you actually let into your home in the first place. And so it's like, yeah, you know, I know she has a birthday, right? I know it's Christmas and she loves stuffed animals, but I really don't want to buy any this year. I do not want to mm-hmm. buy another stuffed animal because I know mm-hmm. once it's here, it's going to stay here for who knows how long, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. it's kind of like putting temporary limits on like what's coming in and knowing that it won't be like that forever. And when you're doing, you know, decluttering your own things first, especially as a mom, and you go through those things and you start to have to do things like declutter the last of the baby gear, you'll understand like how your kid feels about like,
right.
this is a big deal, right? Like,
right.
makes me feel a lot of things, and you can mm-hmm. be more sensitive to it. And you can also relate it to them, right? You know, you can let them know like, I had to do this too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like mm-hmm. I used to have these hydro garden towers in our house that I got in 2020, you know, cause everybody was like, yay, hobbies in 2020
uh-huh.
for about a year. And then it was just like, I have too many kids and cats to keep up with these. I have to get rid of them. And it was really sad because I want to be the type of person who has hydro gardens, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But it's not, I can't do it right now. And so somebody else has some awesome hydro gardens
mm-hmm, uh-huh.
I couldn't keep up on. And so you can tell things to your kids like that of like, you know, I know you love these toys, but you don't really ever play with them and you don't really ever use them. And so I think it'd be, you know, it'd make it a lot easier to play with the things that you do have if we got these things out of the way and let somebody else mm-hmm. use them. So there's just so many different approaches, but I really do think that if you want to start, you've got to start with your own stuff first and kind of the common mm-hmm. areas of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Kitchens.
Yeah. Bathroom. Instead of like going straight for the toy room.
Which is
and it's like,
yeah, most of us like, want to jump right yeah. to that, but
right. No, I love that. I think it's great role modeling. Yeah, because we can kind of help, however we kind of process our own emotional experience of detaching from the stuff, we can kind of put ourselves into our kids' shoes and have more empathy for them. And as I was listening to you talk about when we're, you know, telling them about like, this stuff is going to go, like there is this element of co-regulation, like you're coming together as a family, you're talking to your child as you're going through this process. And if you're doing it in a calm, loving way, they're much more likely to part with it because what they're sensing is you actually providing them the safety instead of the thing. And it's like you're building the bridge. But if you're kind of like, you know, irritated with them, we always have this stuff, you know, we need to get rid of it. You know, I need you guys to start doing this now in kind of this irritated mode. They're less likely to want to even do it. But the impact on them is not as effective because now they feel like they're being stripped of both. They don't have the connection with you and they don't have their favorite items. So that can create some, you know, longer term feelings of maybe resentment or just, you know, just feeling bad because they do love their stuff. Any thoughts around like if you, you know, maybe you are like, maybe you do have a hard time of like decluttering maybe you're like that child, like your one daughter, the 6-year-old, you don't want to get rid of anything and you love your stuff, but you see that it's overwhelming you. You just don't want to because you love all your stuff. What is a way to begin to like, maybe initiate or reframe it, maybe reframe the way it's impacting you so you can even get yourself bought into it. Yeah. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think, it's mostly a matter of changing your perspective. So there's a couple things to consider. Number one is that if you haven't decluttered and you like all of your stuff, it's really important to consider how much stuff you've accumulated for how long, right? If you've been accumulating things for a decade or decades, right? And you've never gotten rid of anything, it's really important to consider how much, like the volume, the actual amount of stuff has actually come into your home without you intentionally letting things go. And that's just kind of the nature of anything in the world.
Any system, really. There's no flow. It's like a clogged pipe.
And things just constipated house syndrome.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Somebody in the group came up with that. Somebody in the Motherhood Simplified community came up with that during one of the trainings I was doing. And she's like, this is a constipated, my house is, I have a constipated house. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. Like,
yeah,
anything, you know, even plants, humans, everything have things you come in, like we even breathe in, we breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. If you just breathe in and never breathe out, that's not going to work. Right.
Right.
So that's the first thing is to like, consider that. Second thing would be really look around at your house, because I think sometimes we look at the big, you know, we kind of just take an aerial view and we're like, I don't want to get rid of my stuff. Right. I like my stuff. Mm-hmm. I want to have my stuff. I don't want to be in a position where I don't have enough stuff. I spent a lot of money on this stuff. This stuff is my stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at it from that very far away view. If you can kind of if you can get a little bit closer and you start really looking inside the drawer, what's actually inside of this drawer, right? What's actually inside of this closet? What's actually at the top of this closet, right? Or in these drawers or under the bed? What actually is this stuff? Like,
yeah,
you'll be like, I don't remember. I don't know. Like, this stuff is old. Like, I don't even fit in this stuff. This stuff is ruined.
And so is it like a feeling? Are we like, when we look at it kind of globally, are we just holding on to a feeling versus like an item?
Probably a feeling. It's probably a feeling of what I see most often, perfectionism, right? Like knowing that you need to do it, but not wanting to start because you have kids and you're not gonna be able to do it all at once, right? And so why even bother if I can't even do it perfectly? Procrastination, right? Because you're like, I'm so overwhelmed that I'm just not gonna do this. And so I'm gonna tell myself, this is fine. This is my stuff. I like this stuff. This stuff is doing good stuff for me, right? But it's not. So could be overwhelm, could be perfectionism. It could be a lot of times really unprocessed emotions, right? Whether
you
lost a family member, you've gone through a divorce, you had a job loss, you went through financial hardship. And so you're holding onto this stuff because it gives you a feeling of control, security, comfort.
Yes.
And while that's common and normal, and I think part of processing our emotions, it's also not a good long-term strategy because then you won't ever work through that stuff. Similar to you're really just accumulating stuff in your home. You're accumulating all of these emotions, all of these things that you've got to process, never actually processing them. And so
it's almost like an emotional constipation.
Exactly. And there's a lot of moms who come into the group and they'll do this thing. You know, I'm like, start in your bathroom, start in your bathroom sink, you know, under your kitchen sink, under your bathroom sink, in your laundry room, start there and get rid of stuff and see how good it feels. Show yourself you can do this, and slowly they'll start to chip away at these things. And then they'll get to these bigger things and be like, you know, I have the bandwidth, I have the space, I have the trust in myself, right? I showed myself I can make these decisions. I showed myself I could do this. I showed myself it doesn't have to be so hard. I can do it in bite-sized pieces. And then they get to things like their closet. And then they're like, I walk into my closet and I feel really bad because I've had 4 kids and these are clothes for my old life. And so I'm grieving my old life, right?
And maybe I can wear them again in the future when I'm 25 again in the future.
I was like, where are you going with this? When I'm 25 again?
Like saving our cute dresses from whatever, like, you know, 20 years ago or 10 years ago. And it's like, I probably won't be, when am I going to wear that in the future? Today or anywhere in the future?
Yeah. I know. I remember I had these like really cute little halter tops, like these little crop top halter tops that I was just like, I think I was like 32 when I finally got rid of them. I wore them when I was 22. I'm just like, I will never wear these again. I just won't. Like, that's sad. But that the time has come and gone. Time for something new, right?
Right. It's like, and it's almost like when you're talking about these different emotional states, they remind me of just dysregulated nervous system. And what we're trying to get to is safety, which when you're saying, like, when you start decluttering little areas, you do get like a hit of dopamine maybe, or oxytocin, you're getting some kind of feel good neurotransmitter. And that's your your biological motivation to like feel good, it helps offset the tension you feel and the anxiety you feel about partying. And so it's kind of balancing the system so that you can do, so I love that approach about doing it in small steps so that you can process it without the overwhelm. It's kind of like learning something new. You're not going to start learning like this huge thing, like all in its entirety. You're going to learn one step and then the next step and then the next step, because you have to stay in that learning zone. That's not dysregulation. It's just enough interest in something new, but not overwhelm.
Yes, exactly. And I think the last thing that I would add to this is that we learn a lot about our habits and the things that soothe us and the things that we've done in the past to soothe us when we do our stuff first, rather than jumping into our kids' stuff. And it gets a lot clearer on like how much we have maybe bought things to make ourselves feel better, right? Or mm-hmm. bought things to show our kids we love them, or just avoided things, right? Maybe we have a procrastination habit. Maybe we have a perfectionism habit, and we start to recognize those things and we can undo them. And I don't really know how this connects, but I wanted to share it with people is when it comes to decluttering our kids' stuff, if we have that understanding, right, of like our role in it, which really is the whole our responsibility, it's 100% our responsibility. We take responsibility of that by doing our stuff first and learning that about ourselves and how to do it. And then we can show our kids how to do it, because we oftentimes want to jump right into decluttering their toys and being like, I'm getting rid of these toys because nobody helps me clean up, right? Or I'm the one that has to do everything for everybody and nobody's helping me out, so I'm getting rid of the toys. We are not taking responsibility for it. We are putting that responsibility on the kids, and they didn't buy the stuff. They have no control or power over what comes into the home or what mm-hmm. leaves. And so if you can learn this for yourself and practice for yourself, you don't have to do it perfectly and you don't have to be totally done, but enough to, you know, show your kids like, I get it. You know, we had too much stuff. I'm figuring it out. I got too much stuff for you guys. I said yes to too many presents, or, you know, I didn't tell grandma and grandpa to slow down on the gifts, right? Or whatever it might be. And not put that responsibility on our kids, because it's not, you're going to have a lot more success too. So I would be curious mm-hmm. your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Because I think we unintentionally blame our kids or make them feel like it was their fault or their responsibility. When you look at them, they're 5 years old. Like, they didn't drive to the store and get that. They didn't right. Amazon Prime that. They didn't.
Right. Right.
It wasn't their.
Yeah. And it's back to the expectations that they should be able to manage all this stuff that's come into their life. It's not developmentally appropriate yeah. for them to do that, unless you have been really conscious of teaching them that skill, which if you're mad at them, you probably haven't had this conscious skill building, because if you did, they probably would have learned some of it. They would be doing it more, right? Like, you know, it's like if you enroll your kid in baseball year after year, by age six, they're going to be pretty decent. Whereas if you never let them play baseball, they're not going to know what to do with the baseball bat and the glove. And right. so how much effort have you been putting into kind of teaching their young brain to do this skill? But yeah, in terms of the responsibility of like, you know, whose fault is it? I think it's great when we start with ourselves, because it goes back to what we're saying about co-regulation. I feel like it's a co-regulation issue, because when you do eventually get to their toys, they're going to feel bad, just like we all feel bad about separating, but we can separate from something and attach to something else. So you have to be the adult present when you're helping your child declutter, because now they're relying on your co-regulation with them to feel safety in a moment that is emotionally challenging for them. But if you don't understand what that feels like, because you haven't done it with your own stuff, it's going to be hard to acknowledge, validate, understand, and empathize with them. If you're like, well, I don't know why this is so hard, just put them in the bag. It's like, well, let's go through your closet first and let's see how hard it is. Right.
Yeah.
So exactly. It's like, what comes first? Putting the cart. We don't want to put the cart before the horse. So I think it's great to start off as ourselves, to do that ourselves first.
Yes.
Yeah. Such great discussions. Yes. I love it. I know we could talk forever about this, because it's really kind of like peeling the onion. You're not going to be like a pro overnight, right? So what's kind of your overall advice for parents that are just starting?
I would say, if you don't know where to start, I would say just start with something like we talked about, like under your kitchen sink, under your bathroom sink, your sock drawer, your laundry room or your laundry cabinet, something that's just not going to feel emotionally charged, something that you can probably do in the cracks of your day while your kids are around you. Also something that's going to have a significant impact on you, right? When I tell people to do the laundry room, they're like, oh my gosh, I actually like doing laundry now. Not that they're doing that for fun, right? But they're like, ah, it's not so bad anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would start with something simple like that and then let it snowball and just continue moving forward. Just have your next project lined up of what you want to do next. And also be mindful of what's coming in, I think is another thing, what's coming in. But I'm also, I would be interested in hearing or having you tell people about your podcast, because you were trained by Dr. Laura, who wrote the book Peaceful Parent, Happy Kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she has one like Peaceful Parent, Happy Siblings. And that's, recommended the Peaceful Parents, Happy Kids book to people before. I love that book. It's just so simple. It's so simple and it feels doable, is why I like it. I think it's actually the only parenting book I've ever recommended. Whole Brain Child, I think maybe, but that one feels like very like scientific to me.
It's not as practical.
Yeah. I really love Peaceful Parents, Happy Kids. And you were trained by her. So you want to tell everybody like what it is that you do and about your podcast?
Yeah, sure. My podcast is called Delight in Parenting. That's kind of my company name, because actually delighting in our children is backed by research to be one of the most essential nutrients they need during childhood. Like them walking in the room and the face of delight comes over your face as the parent seeing your child. They need to see you delight in them every day, once a day at least. That's kind of the that's how they really feel unconditionally loved. But Dr. Laura's approach is, it's all about, when we say peaceful parent, happy kids, we don't mean like perfect parent, perfectly peaceful parent, and then your kids will be happy. It's really about resilience and not just surviving, but thriving emotionally, mentally, physically, really. Although the principles are about really emotional intelligence, that is kind of the foundation of mental health too. And if it's not genetically predispositioned, and how we can raise kids more mindfully. So it's really more about being a more mindful parent, which now, with the research on mindfulness and being self-compassionate with yourself, I love the topic of research on self-compassion, Dr. Kristen Neff, and how parents can show up with more compassion for themselves so that they can be more calm and peaceful and regulated with their child. No parent is perfect. We all lose it sometimes, but what's more important than always striving to be perfect, it's to make a repair when you're imperfect, when you make a mess in parenting. That repair actually offsets the mistakes you've made, right? It closes the loop emotionally with your child. So repair is really important. My podcast is all about parenting in a more mindful, present way, especially focused on how the parents can support themselves. And that's why I love this talk, because I think just the to-do list and the things we manage keep us from being mindful, keep us from being present, and add to the nervous system stress level that then can escalate into yelling, threatening our kids, punishing our kids when it wasn't even related to them. It was just this like external stimuli of things and visual stimuli, like you're saying, and emotional burden, and we just burn out and the kids get the worst of it. Whereas when we can manage, take responsibility for our own well-being, including like the things in our house, and effectively reduce the amount of clutter, we can spend more time connecting with our kids and delighting in them, which is the main reason we even had kids, right? Mm-hmm. Or we brought kids into our lives, is to enjoy them. Parenting should be the fun part, not part of the to-do list. So the more we can take away things that are not essential off the to-do list, the more time we have to enjoy our kids. So,
yeah. There's a mom in a couple of years ago, again, during one of the trainings, who said, I needed to declutter the stuff in my home that makes it hard for me to love my family. And I think that kind of sums up like what you're talking about, because we do this thing where we're like, we yell at our kids and it's not about the kids, and it's not about their behavior, and it's not about them being inadequate or being, you know, intentionally trying to make us angry. It's like all of this other stuff that's in our way.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I love that. I love that she said that one time. I got to get rid of the stuff that makes it hard to love my family. Not love like a feeling, but love like a verb, right? Because when we're so bombarded by all this stuff, yeah, like they walk into a room and they just see us rage cleaning, right? Like,
it doesn't have
to be like that.
Yeah. And what really kids need, they need our presence, right? Especially now that the holidays are coming up. And I know this is going to go live in the new year, but, you know, it's December now. And it's like the holidays are coming up and kids don't need more stuff. They need more time with you, connecting, laughing, quietly sitting together, doing whatever, you know, relaxing activity. They want nervous system regulation, which comes from being with you in a peaceful way, as much more often than not. And so I think simplifying these other things helps us prioritize the more important things in life. Life is so short. Who wants to spend more of their days managing and moving things versus enjoying the people in our lives?
Yeah. It makes it easier for us to adjust to when things happen, like school schedules and flat tires. And
yes. We have more bandwidth for the unexpected. Yeah, for sure.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you so much for this. And
thank you. I think it's been
a podcast.
Yes. Check out my podcast, and my audience definitely should check yours out. If they're on, it's a journey. I've been, you know, on the process of decluttering, and it's a journey. You begin. That's the place you go. You begin, right? And then you take the next step, and you listen to Krista's podcast, and then you take the next step. It doesn't happen over a weekend. It's kind of like skill building. Like, we teach our kids skills. We learn the skill of managing our stuff. So be patient with yourself, give yourself compassion, and then keep doing it. Exactly. Thank you so much for taking the time. It was great talking to you, and really appreciate your wisdom.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
If you enjoyed this podcast and would like additional resources to support you in your parenting journey, my free gift to you is access to my parenting membership with a free 30-day trial, where you'll find bite-sized video and audio strategies, scripts, masterclasses, a private community with parents just like you, and weekly group coaching calls directly with me, and so much more. Go to delightinparenting.com/membership to learn more.